As everyone knows, Jari Park's mission has always been to hear from all sorts of different characters from the world of combat sports. We've talked to promoters, fighters, bloggers, Octagon girls, and now we venture into the world of refereeing as we welcome legendary ref Steve Mazzagatti to the park. How's everything going, Steve?
Hey, it's great. Glad to be with you. I don't know how legendary I am, though.
Oh, you are legendary. I mean, even if we just talk about your mustache, which we'll get to in a second, that's one of the most legendary pieces of MMA, you know, that fans love to talk about on the internet and everything. You're aware of that, right?
That's a scary thought.
It's come and go. It's come and gone, but now it seems as though it's here to stay, the mustache.
Well, you know, I don't know. I like to be a trendsetter.
Do you get a lot of compliments on that? I mean, at least people coming up and recognizing you because of the mustache?
You know, how that all came about, I'm a firefighter, and we have a lot of, you know, different little things we do around the station, and that was one of the things we were going to have a mustache growing contest. Well, I did. My wife, after 20 years, decided that she liked the mustache. So, you know, once your wife likes it, you're kind of stuck with it.
Yeah.
So that's how it all came to be.
She's definitely the one that her opinion counts the most, as opposed to all the MMA fans. So
exactly.
It's definitely taken a life of its own. Have you named it? Have people like given you a nickname for it, or is it just Steve's mustache?
There's a lot of names out there floating around, but I can't get into that.
All right. So we're just a couple of days fresh off of UFC 80. We saw all the usual cast of characters in terms of referees, but we didn't see you over in Newcastle. Why not?
Well, you know, the referees don't work for the promoter. They work for the commissions that in the states or countries that the event's going to be held in. I'm stationed here in Nevada, so I work for the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Some of the other referees, like Herb, they're licensed in California. That's his primary state, and he's also licensed here, as I am, in California and several other states around the country. And, you know, I've also got a full-time job, so I can't take a lot of time off and burn vacation time and stuff like that. So
that said, if you would want to have worked the Newcastle card, could you have, or are you only allowed to work in Nevada and California?
Well, you know, like the sport and the fight part of it, the officiating has to evolve also, and the same four guys can't do every show. There's
right.
Other great referees out there, you know. The ones that you see all the time just happen to get all the TV time. We're nothing special, you know. We're just referees out there trying to do our job like anybody else given the opportunity. But there's a lot of other good referees. You know, the UFC is trying to also expand on that. And, you know, I mean, what Dan, I've always admired his work. He's out of New Jersey. And, you know, if you watch a lot of cards from New Jersey, IFL and stuff, he refs in that stuff. So he got a good opportunity to do a big show in England, get some good travel time, and God bless them, you know.
It's interesting you mention that, because for a while, like, you know, the last 3 or 4 years, it always seemed as though you guys were like the fabulous foursome, you know, it was the same guys at every single show. And through that, that's how you kind of, you know, came up with this persona online. Everyone gets to know who Steve Mazzagatti is, Mario Yamasaki, of course, Big John and Herb Dean and whatnot. When you go to these shows, I'm sure at first you weren't expecting people to start recognizing you like they do now, right?
Oh, no, you know, who would have ever guessed? But, you know, I guess if you're going to be on TV all the time, people are going to recognize you for one reason or another. But I just don't want to draw away from the attention of who the show is really about, and that's the fighters themselves. You know, they're the entertainers out there. They're the ones, and I try to stay out of the way. I don't want to steal anybody's limelight, you know. But, you know, on that same note, you got to be humble and, I guess, roll with the flow.
So are you a fan of the sport? I mean, you didn't work UFC 80. Did you go out of your way to watch it, or is it just something that you'll read up on, you know, in a paper or online afterwards?
Well, of course I'm a fan of it. I don't know that I'm necessarily supposed to be, but, you know, an official has to always remain neutral, so I can't necessarily have fighter favorites. And, you know, pretty much any show I watch, I referee. I'm stuck in this referee mode, you know.
Right.
I guess if you're a judge and you're always trying to judge the fight, I'm always watching the other referees, see if I can learn something from them. You know, just like any sport that you take up, you're going to watch the people that you admire, or, you know, and try to steal their moves. And that's what I do. My style is a combination of all the good referees I've seen throughout my career. all put into one. And I hope that's just about what every other referee and or official would do in whatever sport they happen to be doing, you know?
This is definitely a busy time for the UFC, which I'm assuming you get the most of your work from, just because they're based in Las Vegas and you know they put on so many shows at least once a month. There's the Ultimate Fight Night show on Wednesday that's airing on Spike TV. Will you be working that one?
Oh yeah.
And how do you?
And like I said, the reason you see most of those referees is because, you know, when the sport started getting popular, there were only so many officials out there, so. My state, Nevada, licensed those officials, and we pretty much used them. And most all the shows were in Las Vegas. Now you see they're expanding their marketing. You know, there's a lot of other smaller shows around the country that people can catch. You know, don't just limit it to the one big organization. But there's a lot of, and sometimes those are the best fights. Some of these smaller shows, I've seen some of the best fights of my career in some of the smaller cards.
Is there one that sticks out in your mind as, you know, the best, maybe not even on a UFC card, but just in general in your career that you were a part of that you remember as, you know, one of the greatest fights you've seen or worked with in person?
You know, as a sport evolves, so do the fighters. And every show, they bring something new to the table. And that's what makes the sport so exciting is the evolution of the sport. We're watching it go from a one-dimensional fighter to a five-dimensional fighter. And who knows what's next, you know? So I can't really say there was a best fight. I mean, I appreciate a good ground game just as much as I appreciate a good striking game and or both.
So give us the sort of, you know, the schedule before a fight. You know, obviously the fighters come in, they get ready and all that stuff. What's your schedule like before a fight that, is, let's say, is going to start at, you know, 7 p.m. your time?
Right.
And, you know, what are you doing? And then when do you find out which fights you'll be working on?
We basically don't find out which fight we're going to work till the commission shows up. Then they hand out the things. That way it kind of makes it easier on us, you know, possibly getting bribed or anything like that, you know, God forbid. But we don't really know what we're going to be ref until the day of the show. And we usually show up, we check out the ring, the equipment, the stools, make sure they have stools out there, all the equipment that they're going to need in the corner. I like to go around and pick up all the lint off the ring, you know, make sure the cage doesn't have barbs or anything that could, you know, scratch somebody's back or arms as they're sliding along the cage, just general safety stuff. Then as the fighters arrive, I try to get back there before they're really trying to get in their zone, you know, as they're kind of arriving. And then I go over the, you know, they know the rules, they're professionals, of course, and hopefully they've read the rules, but we have a face-to-face with them, and I go over my pet peeves, what, you know, what I'm really going to jump on as opposed, you know, I'm big on striking to the back of the head, you know. So I tell the fighters, this is your only warning. If you target the back of the head, then I'm going to jump right on it and take a point. And also grabbing the cage or ropes or whatever type of a, whatever you're fighting in. But, you know, it's a big foul in my opinion. So I tell them, if it happens, we're going to take a point from you right away. This is your warning. They know what they're doing. You know, it's a natural reaction to reach out for the cage or see the back of the head, and you're getting excited and just winging away. But that's what rules are for. And if guys are going to reach out and grab the cage and it affects their positioning, or they strike the back of the head, which is a big no-no in this sport, then we're going to have to address it promptly.
You mentioned something interesting at the beginning of your answer about bribing and not wanting to get, you know, not wanting to get which fight you'll be working on to avoid that certain situation. That said, have you ever actually been bribed before? Someone?
Oh, no.
Never?
No, you know, you hear about it, but it's, I don't think it happens as much as what people tend to think it does. You know, I mean, I guess there's going to be a bad cookie in every bunch, you know. Generally, people that do their job and they go in there with a professional attitude, don't let yourself get in a position to be bribed. I don't go to after fight parties. I don't talk to the fighters. I don't have a relationship with their trainers. You know, that would be not proper to see the official over there hugging the trainers or the fighters, and then maybe his opponents over there saying, "What's going on?" You know, I mean, it's a bad perception of what you're trying to, you know. So basically, I don't have any friends when I go to the show. It's other than my wife or a friend I might have brought, or the fans, you know. I mean, I don't have a problem with talking to the fans, but like I said, nobody knows who we're going to ref, you know, until it comes down.
The aspect that I find to be the most interesting is that sometimes, you know, it's in the heat of the battle. There's a guy on top of another guy, whether it's, you know, ground and pound or whatever, and then you have to step in there, break this up, while the fighter who had just lost might not even think that he, in fact, lost. He might, you know, obviously will argue, and then it'll take a couple of seconds to calm down. Has ever been a time, obviously not in front of everyone, but in the cage and everything, but once you got backstage in the locker room, whatever, where a fighter approached you in sort of an aggressive manner to confront you on a call you made in the octagon or the ring?
No, I gotta say that's never happened. You know, for the most part, you know, these guys are A-class warriors. You know, they're proud of what they do. And what people don't realize is the sacrifice and the time that they put in to get themselves ready for these big shows that you're watching, and some of the smaller shows too. But there's a lot of sacrifice that goes into being a professional fighter. And then, you know, to just all of a sudden shut yourself off when you've been concentrating for a couple months on taking this guy's head off, and next thing you know, you find yourself flat on your back, you know. Then they don't really question our judgment, you know. They act very professional.
I wanted to ask you about a couple of sort of controversial fights that you were a part of. The first one was obviously the Gray Maynard Rob Emerson fight, which we actually just had a couple of days ago, spoke to Gray about it and his views on, you know, the outcome a few months afterwards. And that was a strange one, and one that we're not used to seeing inside the octagon, where obviously if people don't know about it, Gray had took down Rob, and then on his way down sort of, I guess, concussed himself, was out cold. Rob taps at the same time due to his injured rib, and it was just a weird situation as to which came first. And you called it a DQ 6 months or so later. Looking back on that, are you happy with your decision in the fight?
Absolutely, you know. And, you know, being an official, you don't have time to think things out. You know, you can't armchair referee it. You know, you got to make these decisions split second. And this sport's evolving. We're seeing new things on a show basis. And, of course, that was something new. Has both guys been knocked out from the same technique? That's the way I looked at it as an official. I initially knew, not Gray, but the other kid had
Emerson.
Injured it. Yeah, he was taking a beating, and he was on his way out. And, of course, the slam was I pretty much made my mind up that he probably wasn't going to come through. That slam, you know, when you get picked up and slammed like that, I don't know if you watch this fight science or something that's on TV now.
Right.
They do a rampage clip of Rampage slamming the opponent to the ground with a famous rampage slam, and it developed more force than any of the other hits they had set up. A hockey hitter hitting the guy up against the hockey thing, or they had a football player blind tackling the quarterback to see what kind of force those generate. So, and then, of course, Gray rammed his head into the canvas and knocked himself out too. So as an official, I'm sitting there looking at two guys rolling around on the canvas helpless. So I did what I thought was a reasonable outcome.
After the fact, did anyone, you know, within the commission or in the UFC talk to you about it and sort of get more information as to why you made your decision, or was everyone happy with it and moved on right afterwards?
Well, I mean, you know, people are going to question all kinds of things, you know, and it was a new thing in the sport, and everybody's saying, wow, everybody. I mean, just the same reaction I had too, but as the official, it's my ring. I've got total control of the ring. I make the decisions, and I had to step up to the plate and make the decision, you know. I mean, everybody in the audience can sit out there and second guess it and everything, but those decisions have to pretty much come split second, and that was a decision I came to. Of course, people had questions. Wow, that was crazy, you know. Could have it been any other way? I don't see that it could have been any other way. You got two guys that are unable to continue.
If you ask me, in terms of sort of controversial moments in MMA right now, there are two that really come up. It's always the question of whether the scoring system that they have in place now, the 10-point must system, which they take from boxing, is in fact the proper one to use. So let's talk about that one first quickly. What do you think about the way fights are scored? And obviously that all came to light after the Matt Hamill-Michael Bisping fight, where a lot of people thought that Hamill deserved to win. Are you happy with the system that they have now in terms of scoring MMA fights?
Well, at this point, you know, I think it is the easiest and most simplified system. I've seen some other systems tried, and the more confusing you get on scoring different techniques, you know, I think the best thing to do is score the fight as a whole and look at it and basically who's kicking butt. Of course, if you guys got two guys that are extremely equally matched, then it's going to be a tougher fight on the judge's hands, you know. And then that's when they need to have a lot of knowledge on the offensive techniques of grappling, of wrestling, who's dominating, you know. I mean, a fight can be dominated from your back, and those are that's where good trained judges come in part, you know.
And then the other
And
one is obviously when to step in when a guy is gets so suppose he gets not like take for example the Quentin Jackson Chuck Liddell fight and then Chuck excuse me Chuck gets knocked down by Quentin and then goes to the ground and starts nailing him with a couple of shots and then you obviously have to step in. Chuck is obviously a little bit dazed and thinks that the fight should continue, but definitely a right call. When do you know when to step in? Is it just you get a sense of the guy on the floor's body, on the mat's body, and you could sense that he's stiffening up and he can't intelligently defend himself? Is that the point?
Exactly. You said it. Cannot intelligently defend himself. And again, that's a split-second decision a referee has to make. You know, you don't want to let it go too long by any means, but then again, you don't want it to go too short. You got to let the fighter know that he got caught, you know, and they don't even realize he get caught. In all these guys' defense, Gray's defense, you know, he's a tough son of a gun. They come to and say, "What happened?" You know? So, but unfortunately, if you're not able to defend yourself intelligently, maybe you go out for a second and you don't come back before the referee gets in there. You know, we have basically standard operating procedures, you know. And if you're talking about a fighter who has less experience over a fighter who has a lot of experience, those timelines are, you know, changed also. I tend to stop a Saturday night card thrown by, you know, some local promoter, just kids that are maybe making their pro debut or even amateur debut. You stop those fights real quick as opposed to guys that are professional, big time professional fighters that have had multiple fights and do it, train full time as a profession. You know, you got to weigh all those kind of things into play.
Has there ever been a time looking back now that you either maybe stopped the fight too early or too late?
Well, for the most part, I'm pretty happy, you know, knock on wood, that, you know, I work hard. We work hard on our trade, you know. I go to the gym, I record, you know, I watch all the tapes that I of myself working, see if I can sharpen this up or change that, or, you know, I'm evolving too, just like an official, you know, that gets locked up in his own little world is not going to succeed. You know, we've got to evolve with this sport, you know. As it progresses, we got to progress with it. We're seeing different types of endings to these fights, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, every day or every night, it seems as though there's a new variation of how to end a fight. Like you talk about the Gray Maynard fight. No one expected that, and there's always different ways. And another controversial, so to speak, fight that wanted to get your thoughts on was the Babalu Sobral David Heath ending, which, as everyone knows, cost Babalu his job in the UFC, where he held on to choke too long on David. You ref that fight. Did you think that the punishment equaled the crime, so to speak?
The punishment, what do you mean?
The punishment of him losing his job in the UFC because
Oh,
he
you
had
know,
a
hey, that's not my thing. I'm not involved in politics. All I do is call it the way I see it.
Did you
And that's all a referee can do on any fight. I'm sorry that he didn't let go of the. I felt that he was holding it long. I was in the mindset of, what am I going to do now? Should I punch his? Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do as an official to try to, you know? But I guess he had his thing that he wanted to do, and you know, I didn't make any decision on that. The people
No,
that
no. I absolutely.
right.
I of course not. I just wanted to know if you thought that he had held it in fact too. I mean, it was pretty clear that
It was obvious, right? I mean, the tape speaks for itself.
Yeah, so like I said, definitely always curveballs thrown to you. And you mentioned at the beginning, we just wanted to get to hear about this because you said you were a firefighter, which I don't think a lot of people know about that you we see you on UFC shows and don't really think that you have things to do outside of the octagon, shockingly. How long have you been a firefighter for, and you still actively, you know, work as a firefighter on a day-to-day basis?
Right. Yeah, I'm a professional firefighter here in Las Vegas, and that's my primary income, and been doing it for about 11 years.
Do the guys
here in the Las Vegas Valley?
Do the guys at the firehouse ever try to get free tickets off of you or anything?
Oh, you heck yeah, you know. I mean, you know, I can't get free tickets because I'm not affiliated with a promoter. You know, they'd be happy to just get some pencils.
Whatever you can do to get them off your back, I'm sure. Steve, great to talk with you, really. It's great to get insight from someone who has a different perspective on the fights. And, you know, good luck at the show this Wednesday, and continued success on the rest of your career.
Awesome, man. Thanks.